This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 907, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see.
Hello, my name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my down on his health co-host, Josh Lanigan.
Listen, I've had worse than this. I'm gonna pull out.
You know, some years it's like we are mentally crawling to the winter break, and this year I feel like it's physical.
Yeah,
I've been sick for like 8 weeks, and I'm just pulling out of it, and now you're going down. So we just both need the time off.
I don't expect this to get better over the coming years, you know? Like, at this point, I genuinely feel like, hey, at least it's only a cold, and I can have solace in that. Like, no big deal.
Right, right.
When I had COVID a couple of months ago, I was like, well, this is the end. I'm going to, I wasn't really terribly sick or anything, but it was awful. So today, I was just like, hey, it's a cold. It sucks. I've had colds before. Fine.
And now you got to talk for an hour.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You have a drink? You have some lozenges?
Well, first of all, lozenges and microphones do not mix.
I think when they click against the teeth is the best part.
Oh. Well, I saw some clip of, Christ, I don't know, it was like a Joe Rogan thing or whatever. I think it was. And they were like eating on mic, and I was just repulsed. I was like, how do you not know not to do this?
We didn't know.
We weren't
professionals. Well, I guess we were. Hey. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 907. It's our second to last Pick of the Week show of the year before we go on our previously mentioned winter break that we need to cleanse the mental decks. And also this week, we should mention, we say goodbye to the Comixology app, as well as the year of comics. Maybe we have one more show, but this is the last week of the Comixology app.
I had a thought that maybe we should like eulogize it to some extent.
We could talk about it at the end, maybe a little bit.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Let's make a note. I'm going to put a note in the script that just says, Comixology, where should I put it? Okay. I'll put it
in a random place. Yeah. So I start talking about books. Yeah, like I start talking about Batman. You're like, not so fast, buddy.
First, we got to talk about the search function. All right. What are we doing here? Every week, one of us picks the books like the best from the stack of comics they read, and they call it the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books in the week, the patron pick. We're going to answer listener mail, hopefully. And spoiler warning, this is a review show. Josh, this is your last pick of 2023, make it a good one.
Oh, if I had known that was the criteria. The pick of the week is Amazing Spider-Man Gang War First Strike number one from Zeb Wells. Cody Ziegler writing, Joey Vasquez, or Vaquez with a typo, Julian Shaw. I got it right. I don't trust myself.
I'm opening my college comicsology. Let's talk about it right now.
Brian Valenza on color, and of course, Big Joey C. Caramagna on the letters. When I see that a large event is starting up that requires me to read books from all over the place and 100 different ones, and it goes over months, I don't think, oh, awesome. I think, oh, God, do I have to read this?
Yeah, we had two of those this week.
Yes, exactly. Now, given, though, that – what a boring as shit cover on this, by the way. John Romita Jr., I'm sorry. But given that it's headed by – it says Zeb Wells and Cody Ziegler. I usually know how that goes is that, you know, Zeb Wells had a story in place. They work it out. Cody Ziegler probably
writes Vasquez. It's Joey Vasquez. Finally got Joey to open.
It is a continuation of the story that has been going on in Amazing Spider-Man and actually gaining speed. I was a little surprised that it wasn't taking place in the main book, and maybe it will go through the main title.
It's
going
a little
forward.
Strange that these are all special issues. I mean, the whole thing, it's a line event. It's not a Marvel event. It's not a publishing wide event. That's not like showing up in Captain America and the X-Men. It's just in the Spider-Man related, Spider-Man adjacent characters, and they're all, it looks like from the checklist, next issue is Spider-Man 39. So there's a couple of special, this special issue kicks it off. Luke Cage is getting a miniseries. Spider-Woman is getting a miniseries. It looks like there's going to be a Daredevil miniseries, but the books, it's taking place across Amazing Spider-Man, Miles Morales Spider-Man, and the rest are all minis.
So
it's taking place in Spider-Man.
All that being
said.
Hold on,
last thing. The last book, though, is Daredevil Gang War. Like, it's not wrapping up in a Spider-Man book, unless it's going beyond March.
Whatever.
The checklist doesn't go that way, but that's very strange.
I actually really enjoyed the tension of Robbie Robertson and Beetle Girl's relationship.
His fiancé.
And through the wedding and all the things that sort of spun out from it. I was very invested in that story and sort of because you like knew it had to fall apart and you kind of didn't want it to, but there's no way around it. And so
it doesn't, though, right? Like they love each other. So they had their wedding. The wedding got disrupted by a mob war, which happens in New York. It's a very common thing. And, you know, her dad got shot. They didn't have the wedding. They haven't really been talking. And then she gets sent to kill him. But doesn't and can't, and then he sacrifices himself for her. Like it doesn't go great for them. But it's not like, you know, she tries to kill him, and she clearly has feelings for him.
You know, it's doesn't have to end in killing, but it'd be very difficult to make the relationship work at this point. And I think that's been a very good story, your star-crossed lover kind of story. I think that, you know, if this was just the next issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which it well could have been, I would have liked it just as much. And I thought that a lot of ground was covered here. They really, if you are doing a single issue kickoff to sort of everything that's happening, I really thought there was a lot of elegantly heavy lifted things in this. I am, you know, I'm kind of a sucker when you put all the criminals in a room and they have to get along, and they all think they're double crossing each other, and it's really wacky.
They all think they're the smart one.
Yeah, exactly, and it's silly. And you know, you look how smug Hammerhead is. He's like, I got this, you know. And there's a twist that happens, which, you know, he should be smart enough to see coming. Then we cut into, you know,
he was very distracted by that dress.
Sure, we, you know, cut into a little sequence of Miles and Peter chasing what's his name? Slick. What's
Slippery
his name?
Jim?
Slide. Slide with a Y. Slide. And he is apparently frictionless. And they beat him.
Guys.
And then, you know, Miles gives him shit. It's like, where were you? What are you doing? And he's like, well, he goes, no, I'm going to talk. And I was like, oh, this is an interesting character moment where you're watching this other character who was the younger one sort of come into his oats and calling Peter on his shit, which is what he's done to everybody. And it's at this point, like, it's interesting because Peter has no excuse really you know, other than I'm really busy, I'm trying to do the best. And even that he kind of leaned away from. I just thought it was, I thought it was well written and a little bit of a more mature take. At least it was thoughtful, yep. I believe. You know, and so if we're talking about in terms of like a superhero story that I think looks like a lot of fun. You'll notice, by the way, at the map at the beginning, there's a map of who owns what territory.
Oh, I wanted to talk about the map. Still, I've been waiting for you to stop talking so I can talk about the map.
No one wants Staten Island.
Well, that's interesting. So let's talk about this map. So it's the gang war territories, and they've carved up Manhattan, West Queens, North Brooklyn, and South the South of Bronx into territories. So everyone's like, fuck Staten Island. No one gives a shit about Floral Park or Forest Hills. They mentioned Red Hook at one point in the meeting, but Red Hook's not on the map.
It's not inclusive of the Hammerhead Hobgoblin area?
No, that's not. That's, I mean, the half of Brooklyn is not on this map. Oh, so, okay. Like, the area I lived in is not even on this map. And Red Hook is south of that. So, this is a very Manhattan-centric map. So, let's look at the map. I grew up in Owl territory, and you lived in, I believe, Hammerhead. Magia territory.
Yes.
But the rest of the city is just off limits, I guess. No one talks about Staten Island.
I like that. I like that Ringmaster basically controls the Triborough Bridge area.
Yes, he's got the tolls.
By the way,
he's got a piece of the tolls.
He's making more than anybody if that's the case.
Is the color? I'm a little colorblind, so you're gonna have to tell me. Does Hammerhead control Roosevelt Island, or is that just, you know, nobody, no-go territory?
It seems to be the same color, but it's also the same color as Hobgoblin. By the way, I had no idea that Hobgoblin was a territory-controlling crime lord.
Neither did I.
I thought he was more like a random lunatic guy.
And for someone named Crime Master, his territory is pretty small.
Sure.
Well, I mean, as a master of crime, he should be having a much bigger area.
But again, to be fair, that is a very valuable piece of land.
It's a very valuable piece of land. It's true.
If he's taken, you know, a piece of the businesses here and there, he's doing just fine with that.
He has the 60s, 70s, and 80s in the Upper East Side, so he's good.
Yeah, he's doing good. I think it's interesting that no one wants Central Park. They're like, no, that's the free parking space.
Yeah, that's like our neutral ground. So we can play our softball games, our intergang softball games. It's all everybody's territory. I thought this was super fun. The Joey Vasquez art, at the first, I didn't know how I felt about it, but by the end of it, I really liked it.
It worked. Like, it wasn't like, this is amazing.
It has a very classic Spider-Man feel. Especially, like, that final image of Spider-Man swinging through the city. He did a really great Miles Morales. Like, by the end of it, I was like, okay, I'm into this.
Yeah.
I like the twists and turns. But really, the thing that struck me while reading this was the contrast between Titan's Beast World, which was basically the mirror image of this, the kickoff of the DC Titan-centric event that is randomly also going into one issue of Action Comics. This felt organic. This felt like they were building off of years or however long it's been of Zeb Wells' stories. And so I'm invested in the story here because I've been following the seeds of it for however many issues, 30-plus issues. So all this makes sense. As a Spider-Man reader, Spider-Man fan, I'm not confused. This doesn't feel like it's out of nowhere. This feels like a logical continuation of what's been happening, but in a bigger scale. And so in that sense, that's what an event should feel like, right? Like, you should feel like you're invested, and it's now a story that's blowing up into a big, wide thing.
And it also really, I think, gives credence to the fact that it looks like, you know, Zeb Wells planned this whole thing out, that leads to this, leads to this, and then so well that other people can even take those reins and go, this is only the first issue. It could fall apart or whatever, but I don't think it's going to be like that tree one.
So, and that can contrast with the Titans one, which feels like every other DC event lately where A, it comes out of nowhere, B, it's almost exactly like Lazarus Planet where it involves like something blowing up and stuff falling on the earth and everyone changing. Like that's what happened at the end of this.
Like the Inhumans story that Marvel.
Right, but that was exactly what Lazarus Planet was, and that's exactly how Beast World ended, is that, you know, it's the same story structure, and it just feels like there's no emotional resonance when these events don't have any ramp up. When they just appear out of nowhere, and then there's no time for small moments anymore, et cetera. So this was fun, and I think it helped that I read this, and I read Luke Cage, and I read Spider-Woman, which we're going to talk about in a second, and felt all like a big story that I was invested in.
Well, and also just like the things that happened in this story are not a freak accident. They're all character choices. that led to this moment. And we have been watching those things happening. You know, is it spurred on by, you know, Tombstone's daughter, things go one way or another. Inviting all those people to the wedding was a terrible idea.
Or an awesome one for us as a reader. So if I don't think we've said,
good
but
point.
Basically, as the title says, gang war, Tombstone's shooting, not murder, he's still alive, but shooting at the wedding has left a gaping hole in New York City's crime hierarchy. Kingpin is now over on the X-Men side doing X-Men stuff. And so this is an all-out gang war.
That works out nicely, by the way.
Yeah, it's almost like they planned it all out. And so this allows a gang war between all of the silly factions of the Marvel New York City gang community. And so this is literally a gang war between all of them. And I liked it. Great. I thought it was incredibly fun. I was not surprised at all when I saw it was Pick of the Week.
Yeah, I was surprised at the end when I looked and I thought, hey, you know what? That's the book I had the most fun with. So,
and also, I was surprised when I looked and I saw the checklist and I was like, yeah, I'll probably read most of these. This was fun.
That's great.
I'm into it. Maybe not all of them, but I'll give them all a chance.
Sure.
But maybe I won't finish them all, but I'll give them all a chance. It's not egregious.
It isn't.
It's not egregious. all right, let's talk about Spider-Woman number one.
Spider-Woman number one. I wanted to bring it up because... you don't need to have read this to enjoy the other book, is from what I can tell. That they're going to bring other people in. So what we have here is the sort of return of a Spider-Woman book after two what I consider to be pretty good, one of them excellent, and then one of them pretty good series in a row. There might be another one in there. But Dennis, I was going to say Hopeless, and then he became Dennis Hallam. I thought had a really wonderful and transformative run on the character in that, you know, she starts off and it was like her and Ben Urich solving crimes on the road. And then she had a baby and everything sort of changed, but not in a bad way, in a way that was organic, I thought, and worked pretty well. And it's one of those times where the character kind of didn't have an angle. I think for a long time, like they'd show up, she had a cool costume and didn't really knew where she fit in, but Bendis brought her back, I think at some point.
Yeah. He brought her back.
And you know, 9 times out of 10, giving a character, a kid, is terrible. I actually thought it worked really well in this. It was written really well. The next, sort of arc that sort of the major one that came after that, I do not remember. Her name is Carla with a K.
Carla Pacheco.
I think something like that. Yeah. I thought that picked up on what had come before, but also had its own voice. Not everything was awesome, but it was good and thoughtful,
yeah, Carla
and
Pacheco
interesting. And then what happened was they did the thing where they sort of start to unravel the character because you take away Roger, who was the porcupine character, whatever it was, hedgehog, I forget. And so anyways, we come back to this new number one, like she's back. Some shit went down. She was very involved in the Captain Marvel thing too, by the way, which is
their best friends.
To have
they were in that book, yeah.
Right? And that's their relationship. But in this, she's sort of coming back to square one. Everything's, you know, but she's missing something.
Did we read the story where she was disappeared from the universe and the stupid fucking spider web of the universe or whatever it is? And I hate all that
exactly.
Stuff.
So it might have been in one of those web. Whatever.
So she was erased from existence,
yeah,
and brought back, and now the old Spider-Woman is now Madame Web, which of course is here because there's going to be a movie. But she's also Julia Carpenter, who was the black and white costume Spider-Woman. But I was very confused by all that because I didn't read any of that.
I wasn't confused by it as much as I was annoyed by it. Right. So you're going to reboot the character, I guess, fine. Because you want to lose the baggage of the kid and the love life and whatever.
Well, I don't think they're doing that because the kid, finally the kid's the plot point.
So what I'm saying is then they come back around and what they've done is they've taken away the kid. And I just thought, why do you need to do this with this character? This is the thing. You just did this with Black Widow. You just like it's every time you have a character who has a female character who has a connection to a kid, you know, like they take it away and you watch her go. It's like, this is the part that a character never really recovers from.
Right. We've said that with Black Widow. That was why that was a mistake.
And with this character, like the thing that was interesting about her is that she did kind of have her shit together and she was taking care of her kids and she had support. And it was more like a dramedy comma about her having to work those things out together. And now what you've done is the same thing that they keep doing to Bruce Wayne over and over again. It's like, what if we really fuck up the people he cares about? And it's a good story point. It's dramatic, but it's not original. It's kind of killing what I really liked about this character. And I thought now this is just every other story right now. And yeah, I just thought this reset. I know, but I just
they have to
just,
start her off somewhere and then get to the bringing the kid back. So
I know, but like, just it's boring. Like I don't want to go through that process and then try to. Then there's that however many months afterwards where they work through their trauma and they can't trust anyone or whatever. And I just thought that this was clunky. At like with the way that they wrote Carol in here, and it's just like we have seen these two characters written so well over so long that this felt worse.
Yeah, I don't know what this book is. I don't know if this is only for Gang War, and if it's a mini, I don't know if it's a new ongoing. I don't know anything about it. But really, what we should be talking about is their ham-handed attempt to make us okay with Carol's new costume.
It is the worst. It is so bad.
I don't know if it's the jacket or the fingerless gloves that really bother me the most. But
the pants. The pants really bother me. They're marching band pants.
The whole outfit's a marching band outfit.
Awful.
She shows up at Carol's apartment and Carol goes, oh, hey, cool new costume. Which is them looking at the camera and talking to you. And not each other. This is a note to the reader. Hey, isn't this a cool new costume? Our characters think so. Bullshit. It's awful. So... yeah, this was okay. I liked it in the context of the whole story. I enjoyed Luke Cage's issue more.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it was more directly tied into Gang War, and this one ties it at the end.
Yeah. And then that with the Madame Web shit, I was like, ugh, God.
Yeah, that stuff I didn't like, but at the end, Spider-Man recruits her into his Gang War team, which he had gone off to form at the end of his issue. I didn't love the art in this. I felt like everyone was kind of hunched over all the time. Oh, page 25. Panel 2, like, she's just kind of hunched. It's not a heroic pose at all. Like, it was like they were trying to fit her into this panel, but instead of drawing her smaller, they just had her hunch her body, and this is just a weird.
It's funny.
There's a lot of, like, hunchiness in this.
You know what drives me nuts? The Mark Bagley glasses. The Madame Web, or whoever the fuck she is,
yeah.
Has the ugly-ass, stupid Madame Web glasses, which are, like, the worst kind of Oakley glasses, but they have no temples, and it's like, why?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound too down. I did like this for the most part, but mostly when it got to the second half where she went to fight the gang war and not the first half where it was like,
yeah,
life and Madame Web and Carol's had to get to marching band practice, so she had to leave the story. And well, that's a new vein. I'm gonna mine that vein for a while.
Sure,
I'm not. There's only one more show. All right, so let's talk about
I was very disappointed because I really like the character.
Well, I just don't know if it's only here to tie into Gang War. I just don't know.
Whatever. Like, she's a good character. Don't fuck her up when she uses her.
The Penguin. The Penguin number
4.
14. 4. 4, sorry.
4. 14. Shit, I'm behind.
First, I'm going to say, despite the creepy coloring they've been doing on Kevin McGuire, I enjoyed all the Keith Giffen tribute at the end of all the DC issues this week. I really like this issue of the Penguin. I know we've been talking about this a lot. I think we talk about every issue, but this was one of those, again, structural masterpieses where you think things are going one way. He tricks you, the reader, into thinking, oh man, the help got fucked up. That was cool. And then then it's revealed that nothing you watched was as it seemed. And I thought, oh, he got me again.
And then the help wouldn't, like, it wasn't unplanned, so there wasn't going to be a reprisal for that thing, as I understand it.
Well, there was. Well, he killed the guy.
Right, but not towards Penguin.
Right. He just was embarrassed. Like, I just thought it was cool that, you know, we've spent 3 issues building up this help character, and then he gets beaten, and I was like, oh, shit, that was unexpected. That's cool.
Right.
And then when we reveal that it was all a setup and a performance, I was like, oh, shit, he got me. And then the help was allowed to keep his dignity by murdering the guy who beat him. That poor guy. He's just following orders.
I think the thing, that's what he's meant for. I think the thing about this, and you say we keep talking about it, is that I like the series more every issue. The first issue, I was like, I don't know. The second one, I was like, that's a little better. It's fine. And then which was the one with the help? Was that the second one?
I think it was the last issue, 3.
The third one.
No, it was second. No. Third is building the team with other guys.
These other guys. Yeah. I think the cover is great, but mostly because under the title, the Penguin plays a high stakes game of death. And I was like, yes, that is lovely. That is a great thing to do with a comic book cover. I liked that, you know, the first couple pages and story is about him being nervous on a plane. By the way, he's not flying commercial. But it's yeah. it's funny to put him on commercials. So it's fine. You know, this weird relationship he has with his wife,
super
ex-wife.
Hot ex-wife, or
yeah, and you know, like how it's written in how she belittles him,
yeah,
verbally all the time, and he respects her, and it's an interesting relationship. If you look through this thing, like so much of it is just the two of them sitting next to each other and talking. And that should be comic book death, but it doesn't matter because it's compelling.
Yeah.
It's the series I didn't know. This is a lot like Supergirl. It's a series I didn't want. I didn't know I wanted, and I'm surprised that I do.
Yeah, I mean, this goes against this, you know, every once in a while. I don't like reading villain stories as a protagonist, yeah. But it goes against, you know, sometimes it works. And this, you know, Doctor Doom miniseries worked a couple years ago, and this works. And it's because the Penguin's such an interesting and unusual villain. He's not like the Joker. He's not even like the Riddler, although there was that one. A harsh dig at him where his
yeah it was
is it okay if I close my eyes and picture the Riddler? It's like, oh, ugh. Fuck.
He's actually below Penguin on the tier list, so that's even
right,
worse.
But he's hotter,
is he? Depends on who's doing it.
But you know, he's such an unusual and conflicting character who's been had so many different versions of him over the years that he's interesting in that sense.
And so. I do think it's really interesting that if you were to ask me, like, what is the Riddler or what is the Penguin like? Look, I did it too. You know, I don't know that I have a read on what that character is. I know he's kind of what whoever needs him to be at the time for the story they're telling.
Right.
And so for a while, he's been, you know, the aloof businessman who's above it all, but still a real deal.
It's been like 20 years of him being like the crime boss character as opposed to showing up with a helicopter umbrella to rob a bank.
Right. And this fits with that, I think, but it is an extension of it. It's adding something to that. It doesn't take away from the former or change it, but it makes it better. You know, you're seeing him in his shirt sleeves, you know, with his collar open, sitting around, you know, with a person that he can kind of be comfortable with. I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen that.
He's Tony Soprano. I mean, I do a little bit miss the Burgess Meredith, you know, but that's just me as an old Batman
fan.
He says, but I do like
rock a lot. So come on.
That was to cover Burgess Meredith's reaction to the cigarettes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that, or maybe people don't know that out there, but he didn't smoke. And so the character had to smoke and he kept going to cough. So he created this penguin noise to cover the cough.
I did not know that.
Let's talk about my favorite Batman series and one of my favorite issues of my favorite Batman series, Batman, the Brave and the Bold, number 7. Did you end up reading this? I told you.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you asshole.
I'm sorry. It's illness based.
So this was a powerhouse fucking lineup. So this
Sell
is
me
the,
on it, Kilpatrick.
This is the Batman, Brave and the Bold. It's the anthology series. So it's various short stories. And some of them are just one shot. Some of them continue on for like 5 or 6 parts. Then they move
are
on.
These, are there stories in this one that are continued from earlier?
There's
issues?
One. The first story is part 2 and the rest are all part 1s or one shots. So the first story is the Guillaume March written and drawn story, which I talked about last time. It was about originally Batman with amnesia landing on a fire escape of a nurse, single mom nurse and his daughter. It's almost Batman's own Hallmark story. And, you know, they take him in and they help him and he sort of falls in love with the nurse and he becomes like the daughter's surrogate dad and she's a big Batman fan. And so they sort of nurse him back to health and back to his memory and fighting crime. And there's a big twist in this part 2, and I don't really want to spoil it, but it made me go, oh, shit. And I think there's only one more part left. But it's Guillaume March, who's, you know, terrific. And I thought the thing with these stories is they're basically in continuity, they're out of continuity, it doesn't matter. They're sort of timeless Batman stories. And so these all sort of fit that realm. But the Guillaume March one is really, really good so far. Part 2 was Wild Dog, Here Comes Trouble! ! Part 1 by Kyle Starks and Fernando Pissarin.
Hey.
And I don't know how many people know the character Wild Dog, but he's basically like DC's early 90s Punisher try. Like they tried with this character called Wild Dog, who is the same thing as the Punisher. He's a vigilante in the Midwest who wears a shirt from his local college team he was a player on, the Wild Dogs. And he wears a hockey mask and he has, you know, machine guns and he's the Punisher. But this is Kyle
Starks. Casey Jones. It's Casey Jones and the Punisher.
Yeah, together. So this is Kyle Starks and it's very, very, very funny. And it's just his adventures in the Midwest trying to stop some gang problems they're having with gangs from the East Coast coming to the Midwest thinking it'd be easy to take over. And the tone is really funny. actually, it was actually a really good story. It's a part one. I'm looking forward to more of it. But it was actually just very, very funny. And the sort of blasé Midwestern nature of this was all very amusing. And at one point, somebody asked him if he's going to get in legal trouble for wearing the team's jersey while fighting crime. He says, why would anyone care? Then he gets served by a subpoena. So he has to change his outfit. It was all very funny, very Kyle Starks. Third, Aquaman Communion Part 1, Gabriel Hardman writing and drawing. Haven't seen that in forever.
I know. I you said that, and I am going to read it, but like the fact that I was like, oh, I thought he was done for sure.
Yeah, but here, this is straight up just an Aquaman story where there's a mystery of the deep that he goes to and gets involved in and starts involving, gets bigger and bigger as the story unfolds, involves the Dominators, and there's a twist at the end that I want to reveal, but it was delightful, especially as an old Gabriel Hardman fan. But it starts off with a very, you know, pro-ocean conservation message as Aquaman stops these overfisheries from overfishing, and then moves on to, you know, alien invasion via the deep. And that was, it looked terrific. He's employing the classic costume plus long hair and beard, which I really like as a look for him. I liked it when I first saw it way back in the 90s in an issue of Giffen and DeMatteis' Justice League. I think Kevin Maguire drew, it was one of his last issues. And he was like a last page reveal of him standing there on top of like a dolphin. And he had the long hair and beard. And it was the first time I ever saw it as a kid. I thought, oh, that looks cool. And I've always liked it since then. And then the final story, Josh, is your boy Rosenberg.
Ah.
Matthew Rosenberg and Matteo Scalera.
Nice.
Doing a black and white one-shot story with Batman and Etrigan the Demon. And this issue was awesome. Every story was great. This is the first time I think I've read every story, and every story was terrific.
That's cool.
So if you're a Batman fan, or just like any of these creators I talked about are just good comics, pick this issue up. The Guillaume March story is really good. And if you're interested, the last issue had part one in it. But you could conceivably read this and be okay. But really, this was a terrific oversized. It's 70 pages. So you get a lot of story here. And it was terrific. I love this book.
There you go.
Hey, we're reaching the end of the year. You might be able to tell in our voices and in our mental capacity, but we'd like to thank everyone who supported us throughout the year. There's various ways you've done it. You're the reason the show keeps going. It allows us to pay the bills. We're doing our end of the year finances, and ooh.
There were some bills.
And so you allow us to do that. We thank you very much. The main way people support us is Patreon, patreon.com/ifanboy. They are the direct supporters of the show. They unlock shows for everybody. You know, all the splodes, the talks, and the books and the medias, we're all unlocked by the patrons. They become a great part of a great community. And there's a Discord server. A bunch of new people joined this week. You know, if you become a patron at a certain level, you get an automatic, you know, link to join the Discord server. And so they've been joined. There's also a Facebook community that I believe is still going on. We have a monthly patron hangout, which is happening next week. And it's fun. We like the community there quite a bit. And we have tier-exclusive merchandise. So if you're a patron, at various levels of patronage, after 3 months of being a patron, you get merchandise just sent directly to you. You don't have to do anything about it. It just shows up in your mail. And none of that stuff's available for purchase by the general public. Somebody asked this week, and nope, you can't get a Junior Jamoke t-shirt unless you're a Junior Jamoke. And you can't be a Junior Jamoke unless you're a patron.
I got to say, I don't like exclusivity as a rule, but I like this exclusivity.
So, we don't even have these things. I don't even have a Junior Jamoke t-shirt. I would like a Junior Jamoke t-shirt. I'd have to become a patron, which seems odd. I mean, I could just give myself $10 a month, but
there must be some mechanism where we can see our own merch.
So we can't get it. I'm looking through a hole, like a window with my nose pressed against it.
I'm taking back my endorsement of exclusivity.
Ifanboy.threadless.com is our non-exclusive t-shirt store. We've got 13 shirt designs there. And the great, great stocking stuffers for the holidays. If you don't know what to get your mother-in-law, how about a Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters t-shirt for her?
I mean, it's a universal message.
Exactly. So check those out. Threadless is always having sales around the holidays. They just had a Thanksgiving sale. I guarantee you there will be a Christmas and New Year's sale. So if you've been thinking about getting any of these shirts or the designs and all kinds of merchandise, you can go to ifanboy.threadless.com. We appreciate that. ifanboy.com/support is our digital PayPal tip jar. Lots of people drop some money in there because if they don't want to be patrons or buy a shirt, which is totally cool. And we thank you for that. But if you're one of those people that got super rich during the pandemic and we're looking at you, all those, you know, oligarch billionaires, If you want to drop a couple of $100 million into the PayPal, that's also fine. I'm sure things will go haywire, but we'll figure it out.
By the way, when you said also fine, I initially heard the word falsifying. And it was like, oh shit, what's happening?
Listen, it'll cause lots of headaches, but we'll figure those headaches out.
That's what money can do.
Right. So we thank you. If you need to lose, you know, some cash at the end of the year, consider the fm.com/support link to PayPal.
We finally have a bag. It may be a literal bag. It may not be. The point is we're going to make it work.
Yeah, we'll make it work. We'll hire whoever we need to hire to make it work.
Money fixes things. Apparently, people have money. They just do things. And it doesn't matter.
Right. They have no worries. ifm.com/Amazon. So if it's holiday shopping time, this show comes out the first weekend of December. You know, I got, you know, 3 or 4 weeks till Christmas and Hanukkah. And so if you're thinking about doing any Amazon-based shopping, consider clicking our link at ifm.com/Amazon. It's our affiliate link. We get a piece of the sale. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of Amazon's pocket. We thank you very much. It's something that people have been doing for years, and we do appreciate it. You know, all these things that people do, we appreciate. We can't even tell you how much we appreciate. Also, at ifm.com/Amazon, our links to Booksplode books are there for now. Amazon's changing things. Those links may end up going away. But they're there for now. And bookshop.org is our partner to help local bookstores. If you go to a Booksplode post, you'll see those links there. In fact, our new one this week has the link to buy the collection that features those Turtles books in them. So all these things, as we said before, are ways people have helped support the show throughout the year. And we are so immensely grateful and gratified. Anytime we've had a problem throughout the year, like a little emergency, we've been able to help ourselves, and we appreciate it. And it helps our lives immensely.
That's really true. Does.
And hopefully the entertainment we bring to you or whatever this is, I don't know if this is entertaining or not anymore. I can't tell. But if we brought any entertainment to your life, hopefully it's worth it to help support it. And we thank you very much. Let's move on to this.
Speaking of, I don't know if this is entertaining. Quest number 4.
What is this book?
It's from Jonathan Luna. And that is the correct question pretty much whenever there's a new Jonathan Luna book.
Have you been reading all these issues?
I've read every Jonathan Luna book for years.
I knew Ron did that, but I didn't know you did that.
First of all, I was reading them back when it was the brothers, and then there was a schism. I think
back when I was working in book publishing, he purchased publishing his book, and I had to look into all that.
Right. So, yeah, I read all of them. I don't know exactly why. There's something weird about them. Like if on the surface, like the art's always kind of stiff and weird, but each story is very different than the one that came before it. So
I like that you have these weird things that you do.
Thank you.
I like it.
I don't even know how to explain this without having it take a really long time, but basically there's some mystic folk next to some magic land. They get married, a bunch of monsters come in and they steal the husband, and then she's the princess and she goes to find him, and shit goes bad because there's demons and whatever. The real thing about this issue is, and I believe I showed you a photo of this, is that the first fight that takes place with these they call them tree flower monsters, but tree really monster, what they are bug bodies with a giant vulva for a face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even... It's not even a question.
It's not a question.
Right. It's not George O'Keefe, like, maybe. It's a big vagina.
Or that woman's hat on the Gilded Age last week. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen. I'm not caught
up. It's a vagina hat.
Right. So, and then the inside of it, there are teeth. And then it has a little, like, xenomorphic...
Well, that's scary in there, Josh.
Tongue. It's...
So many monsters throughout the course of sci-fi fantasy have had teeth, vagina, faces, and
it's just
got to get over that.
It's just that this one is so. It's a female protagonist. She's
but the creators
there's
aren't.
Not a the, so the just the juxtaposition of this is weird. No, there is. There's a Crystal Wood does like Storius. She wrote the script. Wow. I don't know who she is. It's just so strange, and I keep reading it. I'm going to keep reading it. So if you haven't been reading this, I just spent most of the time going, what was the meaning of the vagina monster?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really fit into the narrative in any way that I can tell.
Well, speaking of vaginas, did you read Crave number 1?
I did.
I love this book.
Yeah, I thought it was – I don't think it was like an amazing book, but I think it was very original and very well told.
They don't tell these kind of stories in comics. This is an erotic techno thriller, so at least for right now. The kind of thing you'd see in like a movie or movies. Like, you know, you'd see this in like a little mid-budget, you know, thriller or
miniseries.
Or maybe Black Mirror episode. But it's basically, so far, nothing supernatural other than at this college in England, unnamed university. One morning, all the kids wake up and there's an app on everyone's phone called Crave. Don't know how it got there. It's just there. And, you know, you click on it and it says, tell us what you crave. Follow our instructions and we'll make it happen. And since they're all kids, a lot of sex. I want to make out. I want to bang that person.
I like the one sweet kid is like, I want to make out with her. And I was like, oh, that's nice.
And by the what I love was by the end, like in the background, everyone's making out.
Yeah.
And so like it just becomes this strange thing where relationships get busted up and teachers are sleeping with students. And it's all, you know, right now we're in the first issue messy stage of this is kind of weird. And then the mystery happens where one of the students was missing or thought to be missing. He shows up not missing, but it's the classic scenario of, he leaves a note of warning on his computer. Whatever you do, don't open the Crave app. But then, you know, the wind blows it off the post-it note.
He could have said something.
But that's like the classic thing, right? The note's left. Like, I'm running out the door. I left you a note. But it gets, you know, they can't find it. It says basically don't engage with this app. It's trouble. This is a miniseries, by the way. It's like a 6-issue miniseries. So yeah. I just thought this was terrific. I mean, just in terms of the fact that it was so unusual. I like the art a lot. This is by Maria Lovett. Two L's, who did everything, the writing, the art, the colors, the letters. And I thought the art was really strong, really professional, really evocative. And I thought the story was really fun. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of this. I thought this was terrific.
Yep. I liked it a lot. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
And it was very – I read the description and I thought, that doesn't sound like anything. Because it's adult comics, and I don't mean like nudity, sexy.
There's sex, but it's not like pornographic.
No, it's not a porno comic. That's my point. But I was like, oh, no one does this anymore.
Point. What I do with these image books is I'll read the description, and then if it sounds interesting, I'll then take a look at the art. If I'm not familiar with who's doing it, I was like, oh shit, this is good. Mm-hmm. And so I read it and I thought that was really terrific. So I'm looking forward to more of it.
Yes. That brings us to what's the furthest place from here? We have a little...
Wait, also from Image?
Yeah, we had a little Image block here unintentionally.
Image block here, yeah.
What's furthest place from here? Number 16. I didn't look, but it feels like we're wrapping up. There's a lot of explanations in this one.
I love when you bring this bit back.
Yeah. And we sort of get a view of the world and what happens outside and why all these kids are... trapped in their little old hellscape where they get into groups. And I really liked it. I really like this. I like that after all this time, there is an explanation. It isn't weird. So many books like this that get really sort of out there and strange, never sort of reel it back in, but there is sort of an external structure that does make some sense. And we're watching, this is still coming back to the girl from the very first issue who was pregnant and then was lost in the woods and she's finding her way around. That's the thing. So, I mean, basically what we've learned is that when kids are left to themselves and not given the information, weird shit happens.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's like a scientific, you know, it's comic book scientific, but it's a thing that sort of played out. And there's some drama near the end, and I enjoyed it. I feel like I'm being rewarded for my time.
So, Local Man number 7, this is the book from Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks. Who are, I think, co-writing it. They don't make it clear. And they're both co-drawing it. I just want to mention this issue because, first of all, this book is, I think, is incredibly fun. It's about one of the 90s Image characters, early 90s characters, sort of, you know, older, coming back to his hometown, the Midwest, and trying to fight crime but not being able to because he's not allowed to use his identity because he got legal issues with the old team. Anyway, the point of this is, in this issue, he stumbles upon a sex and love cult in the woods, and they rescue him from having fallen in a river. And, you know, he's the classic thing. He's sitting on the chair with a blanket around him and some middle-aged, overweight guy with white guy with dreadlocks is giving him his spiel about the cult. And he's got a chest covered in tattoos of the hearts. And he gives him a cup of tea to warm him up. And I was like, don't drink that. But he does.
And it's laced with psilocybin. And so then the main character has a trip for the rest of the issue where he can see his own word balloons, and he walks into the panel borders like a mime walking into a glass wall. And then he has a whole hallucination with his ex-girlfriend, and it's just very funny. And this book is good. I still don't know what the overall story here is, other than following this guy's adventures, but there seems to be something involving this shadowy organization outside the town. But really, it's just been a lot of fun as Tim Seeley explores the tropes of the early 90s image stuff, which was very, crazy. But sure. This issue particularly was very funny. And I just like when they play with the conventions of the medium, mm-hmm. in which he's like, he can reach out and touch his own sound effects and keeps walking into the side of the panels, which made me laugh every time. Uh-huh. It's such a dumb joke, but it made me laugh every time.
And certainly have done well.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. And then the issue always includes a backup that takes place in the early 90s that Tim Seeley draws. And so they really get to play with that stuff there too. So if you, at all read any of those books in the early 90s, this is totally super fun.
Tim Seeley is one of those creators who, I don't read a lot of his stuff because they tend to not, it's not for me a little bit. Yeah, but sure. I really respect him. I think he's a really good comic creator. It's just not the same taste as my stuff.
Which sure. is, yeah, I like, and I don't like everything he does, but this is what I enjoy. So those are the books we wanted to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, the patrons get the vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, by a pretty wide margin, the winner was Howard the Duck, number one, written by Chip Zdarsky, Daniel Kibblesmith, Jason Liu, and Merritt K. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
I'm pretty sure I got those right. Joe Quinones, Annie Wu, Derek Charm, Will Robson, Jordan Gibson did inks, Stacy Lee, Ian Herring, D. Cuniff, Pete Panzis. There's a lot of people for Stanley Panzis.
I haven't seen the name. Well, it's three. There's three stories and then a bookend on either side. So
yeah, it's just a lot of people.
Those all line up.
Travis Lanham did all the letters because that's what a letterer does.
Yep. And thank God for that when writing your credits at the last minute before recording at the wrong time.
This is a 50th anniversary celebration of Howard the Duck, and to tell you the status of the character, it's a single, it's a regular, it's a barely oversized issue, which makes sense for Howard the Duck. Are you a Howard the Duck guy?
I'm neither for or against.
Did you see the movie?
I mean, forever ago. I know that
when I was a kid, I saw it.
When it came out, or when it was going to come out, I was very excited about it, and then I saw it, and I was like, I don't know what that was. And I've never really gotten away from that, if that makes sense.
I have a distinct memory of watching it at my friend's Patrick's house in his living room, or no, his little TV nook room with a bunch of our other friends, and I don't think any of us really liked it, even at like whatever age we were, 12 right. or whatever it was.
Like, I was excited, and I wanted to, but I watched it, and I was like, I don't know what that was. And like... You know, there was a naked duck lady, and that didn't make me feel anything good.
No. Or confusing. It was just like, what?
So I would have said after that, no, I don't like Howard the Duck. And then, as you learn about comic book history and you sort of go forward, oh, okay, I understand what place it lives right. in there. And I know that he shows up every once in a while, but it's never been my thing. It's not like they're making him an Avenger and I got to deal with him for a long time.
I don't mind when he shows up in a big event and makes cracks a joke and, has a cigar. I don't mind. It's like, oh, Howard the Duck. But I don't.
Right.
I don't know if I've ever. I don't think. I must have read at some point a Howard the Duck comic. I just must have. I don't remember.
Sure.
But it's not. It's possible. Anyway, this was, as Josh said, a bunch of shorts. The conceit is that Howard has his own lame version of the Watcher. And he, who looks like Tony Soprano, kind of with a cape, and he's called the Peeper. And he looks at various scenarios. They're basically what ifs for Howard the Duck. I do want to mention.
Wait, this is the one that had the walks, not the penguin.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I'm an idiot.
So, first of all, out of nowhere, jab on Hawkeye, the first story where he dies again, and Spider-Man's cradling him. This is not like this Hawkeye.
Yeah.
So people don't know there was a tongue in cheek thing in the 70s where they had Howard the Duck run for president. So in real life. And so here they had the what if is what if he'd actually been elected president. So that's that first story when there's an alien invasion and it's all very meta. That one was, I'm trying to remember it. That was okay. That was okay.
I'm going to give you this right now as my sort of overall review is that as I read it, I found the stories made very little impact on me. I was like, I don't hate it. I don't love it. I don't really remember what I just read. My interest came and went to a certain extent. And it wasn't really because like, hey, you're commenting on a story that happened 50 years ago, because that doesn't really matter. It was all well enough laid out. Like, yeah, it's a what out. One time he ran for president. This is what it would have looked like if he'd won. This is if he had been an X-Man. And it was fine.
I will say this. I thought the X-Men story was really good. I liked that
I
one
thought
lot.
It was the I best of them.
It was the best one, but also had a little bit of emotional impact at the end where this you know, Howard's at the bar drinking, complaining about his life, and he's sitting next to this guy, turns out to be Moira MacTaggert's son, who has these, you know, reality-altering powers. And so he says, you think it's hard being you? Try being a mutant. And so he makes Howard a mutant. And this is all taking place in, like, the 80s. And so immediately Cerebro lights up and Professor X from the 80s and the X-Men from the 80s go pick him up because he's in. And there's sort of like this weird, like, he doesn't even have a choice. Where they sort of throw him into life of the X-Men. And then it goes to the 90s and they're all around the pool from the swimsuit edition. And he's happy, right? He's got friends. He's got a family. He's drinking a mojito. He's in a floaty. There's all the X-Men ladies are walking around in bikinis. Like, he's super happy with his life. And then the guy shows up again and takes away his X gene, and they just toss him right out. They're like, he's not an X-Men. Get him out of here.
And immediately.
He's like, but Kurt, it's me. And then Kurt bamfs away. And I felt so sad for him. Like, I thought that was a really good story. Uh-huh. I really felt emotional reaction about Howard Zuck. Like, he finally found friends and happiness, and they just immediately kicked him out. And he was just in the line, but Kurt, it's me, really got me for some reason. Uh-huh. The Guardians of the Galaxy story, it was fine. Whatever. It was okay. But then at the end, similar to the Howard the Duck, the very, very end is Peter Parker shows up, Spider-Man, with the peeper and says, hey, if you can see other universes, is there one where I'm happy? And he's like, I got to go. And I was like, oh, shit.
And then he walks away in the famous, I wish I could tell you what that issue, that image is from. Like, it's on my wall over there, actually. Hang on.
Look at it often, do you? Is it 50? Sounds right.
I think it's ASM 50.
Yeah.
It's anyway, behind my couch. I can't see it usually.
I think the X-Men story made it worth it.
Yeah.
If you take out the X-Men story, I would have been like, yeah, this was kind of whatever. But I thought the X-Men story was really strong. So for that reason, I'm going to give this issue a 3.5 out of 5.
Wow, we just go into there.
Well, there's not much to talk about.
I'll give it a 3. Like I said, I don't think it was bad. I just didn't really connect with it. I will say there is something
I think if you're a Howard fan, you probably like it.
Right. But I also think that there is something about the humor that is inherent in the character that has a lot to do with the time frame. There's a certain kind of satire that I don't think
It's a very 70s character.
Yes, and I don't think it plays particularly well modernized, and therefore, you know, it's a little like Dirty Mad Magazine. Not that dirty, but just a little bit. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
It's you know, it's not super highbrow. It's like, it's a lot of like, ooh, look at this over here. You know, like, it's self-referential. It's postmodern, to a certain extent. You're kind of aware that they're kind of aware that they're in the story. It's fine. It was fine. I hope people who like Howard the Duck, which is, by the way, not a growing contingent.
No,
they're not adding. Like, no one's in the Howard the Duck office. God, I want there to be one going.
I hope
there's a market out there that's untapped.
I have a friend of the show, Jim Ski, liked it because he was a Howard Duck.
Yes,
guy, but. I really did think that the X-Men story was good. I thought the rest of them were fine to different extents.
That was the best.
But I really enjoyed reading the X-Men story, and it really did cause an emotional reaction to me. So there you go. 3.5 stars. 3 stars. Average is a 3.25. We're not sticking with it because it's not an ongoing. It's a special. And so there you go. Howard the Duck is your patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron gets a vote at a book to the rundown. But if you're a patron at the $5 or higher level, we give you Superpower Live on the show. And this week, Mike Cartwright is the patron we thank, and Mike's power is he has complete control on ice cream. He can soften or harden as needed.
Oh, that's huge.
Right?
Well, who can forget when you bring ice cream home initially and you can put it in the freezer for a couple of hours, you're pulling that out, it's still workable. The right. next day,
oh yeah,
get the fuck out.
No, Mike, you know, sometimes you're like, you want to have ice cream and you're like, oh, you take it out of the freezer, but it's like rock hard. And it's going to, right. it's going to, by the time it gets soft enough, it's maybe your desire for the ice cream's gone. not Mike.
Mike's I'm working out a nasty metaphor right there, and I didn't get it. So,
well, I thought you were going to say my desire for ice cream never goes away, but you know, it. I'm not a huge ice cream guy. I do like it on occasion, but like, you know, when you want it, you want it, and you know, you break a spoon trying to scoop it out sometimes, but not for Mike. Mike,
and then there's the melting issue, obviously.
Right, Mike can prevent that as well. So, you know, he's complete ice cream control.
Only ice cream. Only what about cream. Frozen yogurt?
It's not ice cream, Josh.
Gelato?
Gelato is ice cream, but just a different, it's just a different consistency, a different
Why recipe. Isn't frozen yogurt ice cream? It, like, it is a dairy product. Is it not cream? I guess that doesn't count.
That's Alaska cream, hasn't, yeah.
I'm just trying to understand.
This is terrible, but do you remember the TCBY?
Yes. Yes.
Chain? Is this still around?
No, but it was a big thing.
Yeah,
in
so.
Like 88.
Yeah, in the 80s. We didn't know what it was. A TCBY opened in our neighborhood, and I was out with me and my mom and my brother, and we thought it was ice cream.
This
so
is very
we
funny.
Walked in, and I still remember the smell in that place. And we're like, "Hey, this is great, new ice cream place." They're like, "No, we're yogurt." And we went, "Ah, okay." And we turned around to leave, and they're like, "No, you can't leave. You're literally the first people who've walked in here."
Oh wow!
And we went, "Sorry, we just don't want yogurt." And we basically cursed them.
Oh.
Like they went out of business. Like they literally were like trying to get us to come back and buy something, anything. Because we were the first people that walked in the doors.
That's crazy.
And we cursed them out of business, and not maliciously. We just didn't want yogurt.
And what's ironic about that is that, from what I understand, they were the country's best yogurt, and even that wasn't good enough.
Yeah. I mean, now I eat yogurt, but as a kid, I didn't.
Sure. We had one. They showed up in our town. It was fine. The whole idea was that frozen yogurt was somehow healthier.
Yeah,
which
sure.
It didn't. It had the same amount of sugar.
Probably more.
And, you know, perhaps it was better for your digestive system. I don't know that, but that's a possibility. It's not bad. It's fine. But it ain't ice cream.
No. I mean, I eat Icelandic yogurt for the health benefits, not because it uh-huh. tastes good.
Right.
It doesn't taste good. I've had it without any flavoring, and it tastes
Is it
like,
the brand Icelandic?
No, Siggy's.
I buy it. Oh, okay. See, try the Icelandic We could do this off the show. Lindsay went from the Siggy's to the other kind. Likes it
Siggy's
much
is
more.
Very sour, but it's good in a smoothie.
Yeah. All right.
So there you go. Thanks, Mike Cartwright, for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. You can be one as well. And you can also get a superpower live on the show. I think we have time for a question. One question you pick, Josh, you go.
Yes. Let's see. I think the second one I would have a better answers for.
Robert emails us and says, so much about the comics industry has changed over time that it feels comforting that one thing hasn't faded away. Retcons. Heroes would not be murderers. Hal Jordan, Wally West. They never revealed their secret identity. Spider-Man, Daredevil, Superman. They've always been gay or bisexual. Iceman, Tim Drake, Alan Scott, Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy. And my favorite, just kidding, the New 52 is just an alternate dimension that we're not going to talk about anymore. LOL. What are three retcons you would like to see in any comic continuity these days? If Connor's answering, maybe do five since Alfred. Yeah, okay. Everyone's thinking we're talking about Alfred Damien.
Wow.
You can't retcon Alfred. He's got to just be brought back to life. You can't. He's been gone too long to retcon his death. So he does.
Well, I mean, either way, it's not like they're going to keep talking about it after he's back. It's just, at the end, it's the same.
Right.
Like, or they could keep talking about it as it gets back, and it's terrible.
That's my controversial answer. If I had to choose between the two, I would choose bringing Alfred back rather than
as opposed to that's a good take. I mean, the heroes not being murderers is a very good one.
Yes,
and I would also put in that I would redeem Hank Pym. I think that
which I think he's well. You're not reading Avengers Inc., right?
No,
he seems to be back. I didn't even know he was dead, honestly, but apparently he's back in that book. But he seems like he might be evil. I don't know, but yes, you're right.
Well, it's not even just like
you would redeem the slap.
The slap? What's the slap?
Slapping.
Oh, because yeah. I mean, like, I feel like that story.
Well, they tried that. They said he was suffering a psychotic break.
He was Yellow Jack. I'm saying it's almost like I would need to do a reality retcon. Like, it was a bad choice,
right.
And now you're stuck with that on the character.
Are you retconning our reality so we forget about it?
I could, maybe.
You're giving the cosmic power to retcon our reality and choose to fix Hank Pym.
I am yeah. No, I mean, no. If that's the question, no. It's just like, it's just that it shouldn't have ever happened. You know?
Could you retcon me some Google stock from the 90s?
No. I think the first thing that came to mind is the Wally West.
Yeah, yeah. That was children. A huge one. Yeah.
Just that really is that.
Let's just forget that happened.
It, you know, like a lot of the. Let me ask you this. Would you keep Jason Todd's murder?
The murder, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah?
I would retcon him having, well, the thing is, like, you can't, it's really hard. What you can and can't retcon is difficult. Like, you don't retcon a death, right? Because the person died and you deal with all that stuff. A person coming back to life is not a retcon. That's just the next progression of the story, but I don't know how you would even retcon his murder. Like, I don't know how you would even do that.
I mean, you just say that it never happened.
Right, but you can't because it's affected too many stories for too long. Wally West, the whole Heroes in Crisis thing, came out. Everyone immediately realized it was a mistake and just was never dealt with again. Whereas Jason Todd's murder has been dealt with for the last, you know, almost 20 years.
But Wally West kids are certainly that. They've been around for a long time,
right,
too.
Right, right, right. But my point is you can do – I mean, Hal Jordan, they just said, oh, he was infected with a demon the whole time. But they didn't take away the murders. The murders still happened.
Sure.
And they just took away the reason for the murders.
Yeah, that's kind of fair. But, I mean, it's almost like – I think for me the ultimate effect is you want to take that weight off of the character.
Absolutely. And off but you of can't the make it go away unless it just happened with, like, Wally West.
Sure.
Hal, they had to come up with a reason why it wasn't what we thought it was, which you right. could do – Unless the only way to do with Jason Todd is to say that wasn't Jason Todd, but that's been too long.
I think this came up this week. A lot of the right away, all the totemism shit, yeah. I think, yeah. You know, all the Spider-Man stuff. I might go so far as to say a lot of that Green Lantern stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I don't know that it like the story was good, but it hasn't paid off and it just became
what
too
do you mean the other
colored
the other,
lanterns? Yeah.
Yeah. The problem with that is that while the story was terrific, they never. That's all they do now is they, yes. they is somebody from another Lantern Corps shows up. They don't ever, and that's, yeah. Retcons are, what a retcon is, retroactive continuity,
yeah.
is.
What you thought happened didn't happen.
Right, is what you thought happened didn't actually happen the way you thought it did. You can't, like, that's not just wiping something out. I mean, Wally West isn't even really being retcon. It's just, let's just forget about that. You know what? Out of continuity, right. didn't happen. That's more of what they did with Heroes in Crisis. They didn't retcon it. They just ignored it. Which is a right. different thing.
Retcon would be there is that somebody,
let me, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Somebody could pick it up later. This is the problem.
That's always the problem. And someone right. always picks a bad idea. That's right. the beauty and the danger in comics, both equally, is that any old idea could be re-explored no matter how bad it is. You know, so, but I mean, as a strong proponent of secret identities, Superman and Daredevil and Spider-Man, those are all good retcons. And it's not even a retcon. I mean, uh-huh. Superman just got it sort of cosmically wiped away, you know, so does Spider-Man. It wasn't a retcon. A retcon would be going back and saying the whole time they thought Superman was Clark Kent, he wasn't. Like, that's a retcon. That's uh-huh. not – then no one's saying Kingpin right. never knew Daredevil was. They just got wiped away cosmically. That's not a retcon. That's, a, right, that's a story progression.
Let's move away from the specifics
Ice
of the
Iceman
word.
Being gay is what? A retcon.
It is. And so
that's
saying
you saying what you've known the whole time it wasn't blah blah blah.
Right. Okay. Let's just pull it way back.
Okay.
What do you want to get rid of that was done that you don't want to deal with again? That should be gone. I mean, you can say, I know, like a good answer. You think Damian should have never shown? Damian should be gone.
He you died wipe at it all the end away, of Grant Morrison's run, and that should have been the end of his character, which was the perfect segue into the New 52 cosmic wipe away. So you wouldn't have had any of the psychic damage from Bruce losing a biological son.
Right.
You could have just moved on. That was the perfect way to get rid of him. And they didn't. And now we're stuck with him forever because James Gunn loves him and he's in charge. So that's obviously, yes, that's what I would get rid of. I would just, but you can't, that's not a retcon. That would be a cosmic wipe away.
I don't
he's been around
care.
Too long.
Stop getting. It's not the point.
Well, that's the email question. I'm trying to answer the guy's question.
I know that, but I'm putting it out so that we can just say like
right,
these what? Are things that happened in these stories and the characters that were not good, and they shouldn't have done
you
it.
You know what? I would like
better.
To get rid of to never be seen again.
Yes,
Hydra Cap.
Ooh, that's a really good one. That because should never
he
have
got
happened.
Brought back up recently in some book. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it was Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah. Yep. Let's never deal with that mistake again.
I agree with you entirely. That's a good one.
I went, when I read that, I was like, oh no, we everyone agreed that was a bad idea. We wouldn't talk about it again.
We mentioned it earlier, the Black Widow kid thing. Yeah. I think a lot of the kids are the problem. The Spider-Man, May, maybe, you know, like.
Oh, speaking of kids, did you read Action this week?
Yes, I did.
Did you see that Clark referred to that alien girl as his daughter?
And I was very confused by that. And like later in the issue, I went, oh, no.
No.
I think it's very interesting to me because what I think actually works in Fantastic Four with basically exact same story. I mean, it's like there's two alien kids who are from warring.
Same story.
But it works for Alicia and Ben.
It's built into the DNA of the Fantastic Four.
Yes, but also
Fantastic
at the same
Four
time, like,
built the ground up to be a family. And so the family stories work.
Superman already has a family. Yeah. Now, there is something to be said that logically you could say, listen, he was adopted. He's an orphan. Of course they would adopt some people. But I don't think that the story, I don't think the world required it.
No.
It doesn't add a lot to it. There was a little story for a little bit where...
Was there ever a discussion about that? Usually like there's a discussion. Like we had the big moment in a Batman comic where Bruce asked Dick if he could adopt him formally. Right. Same thing with Tim. Big emotional moments. Great. But was there ever discussion? Were we adopting these kids? Is this us calling her my daughter?
Are they Kryptonian?
I think they are Kryptonian. They're like Kryptonian refugee kids.
I didn't know that had been the case either.
This is all a mistake. Well, that story was terrific. That Superman Warworld story. They should have left the kids on Warworld.
Yep.
Fend for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, this goes on forever, but a lot of those things that sort of... I don't know, like, you're not a parent, but like, as a parent, like, it indelibly changes every single thing about life and changes the stakes of everything. And if you want to tell that story, there are places where it fits and there's things where it works. Again, I think it's worked really well in Fantastic Four. I think that those kids and the way that they have developed added in other issues, you know, other instances, they don't. Yeah. God. Hydra Cap might be, especially if they're going to refer to it again.
Yeah, that's the one. I read it this week and my eye twitched. It's like, oh, no. Yeah. And yeah. I skipped most of that, but still the reverberation of it is just, it was a bad idea for Captain America, and it was a bad idea to bring it back.
I was really enjoying that miniseries.
Right, he was revealed to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
He was revealed to be the Captain Krakoa.
He's like, you forgot about me, and was like, that was the point.
That's why you were buried.
Yes.
Oh, jeez. I don't think we answered Robert's question, but I had
fun. We totally did. I think he's good to go.
Contact@iFanboy.com is how Robert wrote in. Thanks for doing so. And thank you for everyone else who wrote in so far this year. We've got one more show to go. As we always do at the end of the year, we put all of the emails into a folder and move on with a fresh new folder for each year. So if your question didn't get answered this year, you can send it in again next year. So there you go. I guess we were going to talk about Comixology, but we're over.
They were the one that survived. There was the rush. We were part of it. Say what you will one way or another. They made a lot of good decisions. Ultimately, you know, they were bought up by Amazon, which means they did something right. And they were the only one that really worked out a deal that everything was there on their platform. And that is to be lauded. And it was reliable. You could
count on it. It worked really, really well for a really, really long time. You and I have different opinions on how it's worked since the consolidation. I think the app has worked way worse since Amazon consolidated it and got rid of the website and got rid of the staff. But that's fine. But I think, I don't know. Have you been using the Kindle app?
I have. I will say I have been using the Comixology app as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Like I'm on it until it's not there anymore.
Well, there's the banner across the top. It's going to be gone. The day after the show comes out, so
yeah, so that'll do. You know, we rode that one into the ground.
It was a great service,
yeah.
And the brand exists as Amazon's comics brand. Who knows how long that'll last? But it's a bummer. Maybe the Kindle app will be fine. I have read a couple of comics on there, and it seemed to be okay. But
the interface is almost exactly the same. I think the sorting is a little worse.
They use the Kindle interface on the new version of the app, but
right.
my feeling is always a dedicated app is better than a non-dedicated app. So reading a comic is different than reading a book. And so I always feel like an app designed specifically to read a comic book will be a better experience than did a general reading app. But we'll see. I'm willing to give it a chance, but it's a bummer, certainly a bummer. And you hope that this is not a portent for other changes in the future. But, you know, these things happen in the cold, in the cold world of capitalism. Nothing golden stays, and all of our comics being in one app, on one location. We've had it for a long time, but who knows if we can.
Here's a possible. Amazon's pretty good at forcing people to push their pricing down. So who knows? It's also less likely that I don't know this for sure, but I feel like it's less likely. There's always these conversations that have been going on where like Marvel is going to go do it on their own or DC, you know, and I don't think that they can afford.
They all have their apps. They have their infinite apps. Right. They have their Netflix one price.
But, you know, the weekly issues and stuff, I think are going to be pretty stable in that way. And I think that there's something good about that.
We don't have time to talk about it now, but the greatest what if in modern comics is what if Graphically had actually bought Comixology, which is Graphically where we worked, and we know that at one point there was discussion about that. This was before Comixology got the Marvel and DC licenses,
right?
And then took off or ahead of everybody and never looked back. But there was I remember distinctly being in a bar with the CEO of Graphically saying, "I just gave her a meeting with Comixology, and they want us to buy them." And that's the greatest what if because Graphically was run like a fucking shit show and. From the comic side, anyway, the technology side, and so if it would have gone out of business. There would have been no comics, digital comics.
So, just so people at home know, he wasn't saying, "Man, we would have all cashed in." No, he's saying comics would have been ruined.
Right. So, that's a great what if. The great what if. Anyway, you know, hats off to you, Comixology. I guess we'll do the show next week with the Kindle app. See how that goes.
Not that we have a choice.
Nope, no choice. Plugs. So, out now. Other shows that we do. Our last media split of the year came out in November. The year in mailbag show is still behind this. Couple shows back on the feed. That was incredibly fun. We emptied out the mailbag and answered some of our favorite emails from the year. In front of that show is our Marvels review. Josh and Paul Montgomery and I reviewed the Marvels. You can find that a couple shows back. And then right behind the show, came out a few days ago, was our final book split of the year on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles books 1-4, the original 12 issues from Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. And that was incredibly fun. We enjoyed that show.
It really was. Yep.
And you can find that right behind the show on the feed. Check it out. And we're getting towards the end. We're entering into December. We have 3 shows left before we go on our holiday break. 1 pick of the week and 2 other shows. Next week, December 10th, you'll have our final pick of the week of the year, episode 908. Then the following week, probably, if it doesn't come out earlier, will be the final talk explode of the year. Josh has it booked, but not recorded, so we're not going to tell you who it is. But it's booked. And then
it should be done now, but I was sick.
That's true. He could have recorded it already, but he's dying. And then on December 17th, our final show of the year, the traditional all-media year-end roundup, which we've been doing since our very first year of recording. We literally did it like 6 shows in. It's been a tradition since the very beginning. It's our final show. We like doing it. That'll be on the feed for a couple of weeks while we take our break and recharge the batteries. We'll be back on January 7th with Pick Week 909.
You can find all of those shows we just talked about in the past. I think the Talksplodes are in the 100 and single digits at this point. Those are,
they are
all available, all the media splodes, all the all media shows. You can watch our hopefully evolving opinions on things.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You can do that. You can follow at iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can find the pick of the week there before the show comes out, so you know, so you're prepared. You'll find the best of the week in panels on there when they are there. Connor and I are both on Instagram at CSKilpatrick and JA Flanagan.
Yeah.
That's my part.
That's your part. And subscribe to our YouTube page, youtube.com/iFanboy. That's where you'll find our old video shows. And we post this show every week. The old video shows are really the fun. Get the time machine and jump back to 2007, 8, 9, 10 and see the wild world of comics back then. It was full of such promise and hope.
And yep.
Lots of good comics, lots of good interviews, lots of good shows. I was proud of the work we did.
Sure.
Check out our calves.
And our knees.
A lot of knees and calves in those shows. So
I'd retcon that. I did that.
In the shower once. A lot going on in those shows. Check those out on youtube.com/iFanboy. Subscribe, like, do whatever those buttons do. And please consider leaving a review or a star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. If you get one of those Spotify year-end thingies that everyone seems to get, and it's got us on it, send us that screenshot. We can put it up on our social channels. It was fun to see someone post that earlier.
We have more than one?
Yeah. Well, you have the one channel.
What'd you sign up for?
I started on the threads? I started a TikTok, and I've been doing dances and talking about alternative diets. So
it's really blown up. I don't have it in me to like do a bit on it. I was just instantly like, ugh.
It's all terrible. Anyway, consider writing a review or leaving a star rating. It really helps people find the show, helps the algorithm make the show go higher, and we appreciate that. And we are done for the week. Thank you for listening. Josh, go get lay down, have some tea, whatever it is you need to do.
God.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
I'm Connor.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.